Hey guys, I'm Dave Brien. Thank you for joining me today. This week, I had an amazing opportunity to sit down with our two health commissioners, Vicky Iona with the New Philadelphia Health Department and Katie Seward, the commissioner of the Tuscarawas County Health Department. And so we had a great time talking about going back to school and all the precautions and things necessary regarding COVID and school and our children and just keeping staff and kids safe. We're going to go to that interview here in a second, but I want you to listen. There's some two really important things I thought that stood out for me. One was on what their take was with their family members and what their advice is about going back to school. And then also what the school's role is when someone potentially does have COVID. So now we're going to jump right into that interview. All right. Welcome, everybody. I am David Brien. I'm here with Katie Seward, the health commissioner of Tuscarawas County Health Department, and Vicky Iona, the health commissioner for the New Philadelphia City's Health Department. And we're here today to talk about COVID-19 and back to school and the different aspects of it and what we feel and what you guys feel, really. What do parents want to know? What do you guys want the parents to know? So with that, I guess we'll just kind of kick off. What do you think are some of the important things that families can do or kids can do to stay safe or to put themselves in as best position as possibly safe? Katie, I'll kind of throw it to you first.
Sure. So I think first and foremost is just being educated on COVID-19. I know we hear a lot about it. It's in the news all the time. Everyone's talking about it. It's on social media. And really making sure that you're getting your information from educated sources so that you're aware of the most up-to-date information, you know, knowing what the signs and symptoms are, making sure that if someone is sick in the home, you're keeping the rest of the family members home from school. If someone is sick, that they don't go to school. Those are primary ways that we can try to stop spread in the school system. In addition to that, you know, all of the kind of common sense things that we've all heard, such as hand washing, utilizing hand sanitizers when you're unable to hand wash, social distancing, and then of course mask wearing. And I don't think any one piece of that is the golden ticket, but it's doing all of those things together that's going to result in the best outcomes.
Well, thank you. And on that, you said social distancing and things like that. We are. We're far apart here, as it may look on camera. I'm not sure, but I wanted to kind of throw that one out there. And I think one thing you mentioned there that I feel like a lot of people are kind of brushing over or quickly going over is that screening. That screening, and it's not just taking your temperature. It's all about looking at all those symptoms. And if we do that, and we know our bodies, you know, if we're not feeling well, not to come in. I think that one is just overlooked. I think the social distancing, I think we've done a good job. You guys, all the health departments did a good job getting that out, mask. But just really knowing who you are, and if you're not feeling well, don't say them.
What's normal for you? So I would like to say that so many people think it's their allergies or their normal sinus trouble. And in right now in our COVID climate that we're living through, a lot of times it turns out to be COVID. So some people get some of the classic symptoms we think about, like the fever, cough, shortness of breath. Other people have just the runny nose and the sore throat, or they have stomach pain or diarrhea. Some lose that taste or smell. That's sort of a telltale sign for us. All the rest mimic other things. So we have to be careful.
So that's to stay home, right? But now when do you think on those, if I am, maybe it's my allergies, maybe not, and it's my child, and maybe not, I start thinking things, when should they call primary care doctor, or what should they do if they're unsure? Is that a... Oh, that's not a fair question.
Absolutely. I think it is a question. Okay. No, you're fine. I think one of the things that's good to know now is that our testing capabilities are much more widespread. So if you're unsure if it's COVID and you want to be tested or you want to have your child tested, there are places that you can do that now here in Tuscarawas County. And in addition to that, you know, also just doing basic screenings, because we have seen a lot of pre-op screenings just coming back with asymptomatic positives. So people who don't have any symptoms are carrying the virus. And so I think reaching out to your primary care doctor, getting advice from them, from the pediatrician, and if they're recommending testing, knowing that testing capability is out there and available. Right now, you know, it could change, but our labs are turning around test results in about 48 hours, which is pretty good. So if you're having symptoms and you want want to get tested same day, and in most situations you can. And so within 48 to 72 hours, you know then whether or not it is or isn't COVID, and can send your child back to school with a sense of security, knowing that they're not going to be spreading it to anyone.
Absolutely. Thank you. So on that, what happens? I've briefly talked through, I don't know who would like to take this first, but what you guys talked through, what happens if a child or a staff member does test positive for COVID? What happens?
Well, I'll take that one, because the laboratories are required to report that positive COVID test to the health department in the jurisdiction where that person resides. So one of us, if they live in Tuscarawas County, will get notified. And then our health department then will take over and we'll contact that positive person. If it's a child, we'll contact the guardian or parent, and we'll do some contact tracing at that point. And that is all an effort to try to find out who maybe they were in close contact with, so we can slow the spread of the COVID.
So these close contacts and or direct contacts, however it's kind of phrased, how do we go about determining that? What's the, there a criteria, or how do we decide that?
Yeah, so that's six, currently defined as within 6 feet for 15 minutes or longer. And that is regardless if you're wearing a mask or not. Okay. So that's one of the things we typically get asked, you know, when we're contacting people, well, I had a mask on when I was around them. And certainly that does reduce your risk of catching and contracting that virus, but it's not enough for us to say, okay, you're in the clear. Okay. The only time we're actually able to do that is when someone is in full droplet personal protective equipment, which is the things that you see typically when you go to a hospital or something like that. Mm-hmm. So your goggles and face shields and your N95 mask and gowns and gloves. So, you know, that's a little bit difficult, obviously. And what's even more difficult about that is we have to go back a little bit before symptoms start. So because someone can actually start spreading the virus to someone else a few days before they become symptomatic. So, you know, when you get back into school systems, you think about, you know, maybe kids that are changing classes or kids that are out at recess or in the cafeteria. And so that's one of the things that we've really talked about with school systems, is how to really try to narrow down the amount of potential contacts that someone may have. Because our goal is not to quarantine a whole grade level or quarantine a whole classroom. I mean, if we can keep it as minimal as possible, we want to do that. But at the same time, we recognize that we have a responsibility and an obligation to let parents know when their child may have been exposed, or let a teacher know when they may have been exposed. And so we're kind of juggling both of those things. And so what we do see, for example, is when we do contact tracing and someone attended, you know, a church service or a birthday party or a sports practice, and they're not able to definitively say, I was in close contact with this person, this person, and this person, and just simply say, I don't remember who I was in contact with. That's when we really have to err on the side of caution, and that's when we have to make it the recommendation that anyone that attended the party, the sports practice, or what have you, quarantine for 14 days from the last exposure. So, you know, it gets difficult, and it's all based on the information that we gather as we start our contact tracing investigation.
So would you, Vicki, would you be calling the school if it's one of a staff member or a student, or no?
But we would have to call.
Okay.
We would want to call and find out if you're cohorting like you had talked, or if that in fact is your policy, you can definitively say they were in this distance and within that 6 feet with these folks.
Okay.
So we'll have to talk to the school to find out who possibly did they spread it to, why they were infectious.
So getting these direct contacts, you're going to get them from the actual person.
If we can,
You know, mm-hmm. what they can, but then also reach out to one of the schools and see there. Now, does the school then do a contact trait? Are we the ones making the phone calls, or is that from the health commissioners?
No, so what we would do is we have identified a primary point and a secondary point of contact for each school district. Mm-hmm. And so we would kind of start down the chain that way. And then that primary point of contact would reach out to maybe the individual's teacher or the individual sports coach and say, you know, this is what we're looking at. Who can you identify? Really what we ask to have provided to us is a name and a phone number.
Okay.
And if at all possible, the last date of contact that person had with them. Because again, if, you know, we do a 48-hour look back from symptom onset. So let's say someone becomes symptomatic on Wednesday and we find out on Friday that they're positive. We're going to ask for all of the contacts from Monday through Friday. So if you can tell me that someone had contact with the individual on Monday and not Tuesday, then that takes a day off the quarantine period because we are quarantining individuals for 14 days from the last date of contact. So again, that's very helpful information. At that time, then, we notify each family, person, parent individually, and we let them know that they were named as a close contact, what they have to do in terms of quarantine, what options they have in terms of testing, and what they should watch for, signs and symptoms. We answer any questions or concerns they may have, but one of the things that we do not answer is we do not tell them where they were exposed and who the exposure was from. And that's simply because by law, we're not permitted to do that. Now, the individual, if it's a friend, classmate, a teacher, they may decide to self-disclose that to others. And that's certainly their right to do that. But it is something that the health department does not have permission to do, nor does the school system. So once we've notified the school who the individual is, we can give that information out under the Ohio Revised Code because it's for the purposes of reducing a contagious disease spread. But then you guys are obligated as well under the protected health information not to disclose that any further.
Okay, so Vic, you're saying we shouldn't, as schools, we're not putting announcements out every day or all calls that any information about illness.
Absolutely not. We're going to try to be as discreet as we can, but we have to trace. And so we are not asking the schools to do that, nor should you. We do want to protect people's privacy. We have to do contact tracing, though. So where do you find that in the happy medium? Right. That's what we do.
It sounds like one of the important things as a school district and in whether it's the students or the teachers in the district itself is those seating charts and bus seating charts and actually in following through with those cohorts and really being able to screen and track where kids are throughout the day.
Absolutely.
Is going to be important to look back.
And it's not about control. You know, we're not trying to control people's movements or anything like that, but we are trying to make sure that we can appropriately identify and inform the individual. Because I feel like, you know, you have to be able to make decisions for your family and for your child that are informed. And so knowing that we will be contacting you if they have been named as a close contact, I think that is something that can maybe put your mind at ease that even though you may not see announcements from the school that say we sent home four kids today that may have COVID or there were two individuals that were tested, you know, there are things happening behind the scenes every day at every hour. And we do take this responsibility very seriously and will make sure that we are doing the proper notifications and answering any questions for anyone that may develop or be in contact with someone with COVID.
And what the important thing is that I would like to put across is that we're trying to preserve your family's health. We're trying to slow the spread or make you aware if you've been in contact so it doesn't go any further to grandparents or aunts and uncles or other friends that may be in contact with your family. If you know there's a possibility that one of your family members has been in close contact, then you can take the proper measures. So it's just about trying to slow the spread, to slow people becoming ill, and making sure everybody's as safe as they can be.
Absolutely. And I think that is an important thing to get across. Being throughout the situation, a very tough day of situation, all of us as schools have got to work with both you guys and your departments and your teams very closely on a daily or weekly basis. And we all appreciate that. I don't know if it always people know. We're all trying to do is care for these kids. That's our top priority of everything is assure that safety. We all have connections in the schools. We all have kids. I have two children that are going to be in school. You guys have children that work in schools, children that attend, grandchildren, nieces, nephews, et cetera, that are in these schools. So we're only trying to do what's best, even though it's going to be different this year.
And we, and I, you know, certainly the one thing that I want to communicate is that, you know, Vicky and I are living this every day, and it's not something that that we like either. You know, if we could go back to normal, I think we all would do it in a second. But right now, this is our new normal. And so we have to figure out ways to cope with that and try to allow our kids to have a school year, have sports season, but make sure in the process someone doesn't become seriously ill as well. And I don't think that there's any one right answer or any family. And I know that the families are faced with some tough decisions right now. You know, they can choose between a remote learning program versus an in-person versus a half and half, depending on what district you live in. And I don't think there's a wrong decision that you can make. You know, you just have to do what you feel is best for your family. And, you know, my sister is a teacher in grade school, and I have two nieces that will be entering kindergarten, and she's asked me, what do I do? Do I send them to school? Uh-huh. You know, and I said, well, it depends on when we're having this conversation. You know, certainly rates of infection spread change all the time. But I said, you know, I would send them. And that was my recommendation to her. It's not that we want kids to be holed up at home and not develop those necessary social and developmental skills that they get, because we know school's not just about academics. Right. And I said, you know, I think that the schools are planning very carefully for this. They're taking the precautions that they need. And so right now, my recommendation would be to send your kids to school. But that may change if we start to see co-infections with flu and COVID, if we start to see more widespread community spread within sports teams at schools. And so I think the one thing to keep in mind is there's not really a black and white answer. And I know we want that very badly, but the situation is going to change. And someday my answer may be this, and the next day it may be the next thing. And that's so frustrating, trust me. But yes, it's just the nature of where we're at. As recommendations change from the CDC, as data changes, as we learn more about this virus, information will change.
Yeah, and it was so hard to be put under the stay home order. And as hard as that was, I think sometimes it's even more hard to go ahead and let them come back to school, but it's necessary. If we can do it as safely as we can and as safely possible, we need to learn to live with this virus if we can. Mm-hmm. And if the infection rate goes through the roof, then things will change. And you just got to be ready to be adaptable, ready to make changes when the school's asking that of you, have backup plans with childcare if you must work. I mean, I have grandkids. I have a daughter-in-law and a son that both work, and they have three little ones. Two will be in school. One will be at a babysitter around a lot of other kids. So we really care about families and the kids and this infection spread as much as anybody, because it touches home with us too. We just need to find a way to live safely with it. Doing all the measures that Katie talked about the hand washing, frequent, teaching the kids now before they head back, frequent hand washing, washing that whole 20 seconds to really scrub off any possible virus, to, you know, get used to wearing the mask. You know, we know that blocking the droplets is a key to someone who doesn't know they're sick. So if it would be so easy if we knew by looking at someone that they were sick, they look sick, so they must be getting COVID, and we can separate them out. But that's not the case with this virus. Some people do look sick, others don't. So you can't always tell, but do the best you can to monitor your family, monitor your kids for symptoms. Anything that's questionable, call your pediatrician, call your provider. And then we'll try to continue on and get them back into the classroom.
Absolutely, thank you. With that, you said with masks and having young kids, and is how do we practice, or is that the key to get used to these? I mean, I know it's, for me, it was a little bit in the beginning, but the more I've just had to wear it, I get used to it. And sometimes I don't even notice depending on the situation, but should they be at home practicing wearing masks for a little bit of time, or trying different kinds on and sizes?
I think so. I'll start first, Katie, and sure. then you can jump in. But my grandkids are 19 months, then 5 and 7. And my 5-year-old and 7-year-old have been wearing them. They haven't gone a lot of places over the summer months, and their parents have kept them home most of the time. But when they have, they've gone, and they wear them really well. They don't mess with them. I think for them, it's like play. Okay. You know, it's like they put on costumes for Spider-Man and things like that. So they put masks on and they get very used to it. I think kids are very adaptable when we don't give them enough credit sometimes.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the one thing I want to say is masks are uncomfortable. I don't like to wear them. Uh-huh. I have so much respect now for the medical professionals that wear them all day long, every day before this, you know. They're hot and they're uncomfortable and it's difficult to communicate with people. And so I think that one of the things that people are saying is, you know, the plans aren't realistic for the kids. You know, certainly I know how 5 and 6 and 7 and 8-year-olds interact with each other. It's close. They touch everything. They have their hands in their mouth. When they're at recess, they're all clumped together. So then to say they need to wear masks, they need to wash their hands, and they need to social distance. In what world is that realistic? Right. And I get it. And this is going to be changes in social norms for adults, let alone children. And social norms are the hardest things to change. I think a lot of people say, well, when I have my mask on, I touch my face more. And isn't that what we're trying to avoid? Absolutely. You know, again, it's recognizing, oh, I am touching my face. I need to not do that. I need to not adjust my mask. We do know, as Vicky said, that it does slow the spread. So if we can stop a 5-year-old from sneezing into the hand of another child because they had that mask on, that's going to be a benefit. But we also know it's not perfect. And so, you know, unfortunately, we will see virus spread. It's not going to just magically stay out of the schools. And that's when the role of public health comes in, and we try to stop or slow that spread by doing our contact tracing. And so I just really want parents and families to recognize that we don't expect this to be a perfect process, and we don't expect to have, you know, things go completely smooth with this. But again, if we can just reduce the disease burden and try to stop it as much as we can, then I think we've been pretty successful.
And like you say, with the young kids, they're going to play. They need to. So it's healthy. But if we as a district then in schools just put those cohorts in a smaller group and mm-hmm. separate those groups a little bit, as opposed to hundreds of kids together at one time,
then
we're helping what they need social emotionally and what's right for them developmentally, but also minimizing risk.
Yeah, and let me give you a perfect example of that. So as I mentioned, my nieces, they happen to be twins. And prior to COVID, the thought from their parents was, we're going to separate them. We're going to put them in separate classes, kind of let them develop their own right. individuality, that sort of thing. And so one of the things that I talked with them about is, you know, perhaps putting them together again this year. And the reason for that is to limit exposure. Mm-hmm. You know, they're now in the same cohort. They're being exposed to the same people every day, as opposed to one being exposed to one group, the other being exposed to another group. So, you know, just taking little steps like that to try to not completely eliminate contact with others, but just reduce the amount of contact that you have with others.
Absolutely. Anything else you think that we didn't ask today that maybe you're hearing as you get all the questions? I'm sure your phones are busy. Anything else you think our families and maybe educators would want to hear?
We're hoping that there'll be a vaccine available to families sooner than later, but we'll have to still wait and see on the success of the ones that have in trial. But what we have to remind people is to continue to live safely. You've got to continue as adults, as the leader of your family, to still try to stay out of crowded spaces, to go home after school, to combine your necessary runs to the grocery to a minimal, do pickup orders, do whatever. But until we can get this virus in check, it's still going to be with us. And we need to continue to practice safe behavior, teach our kids that now. We're hoping that for sure this is not going to be forever. It will someday, with all the science we have available to us, that we will beat this thing. But for now, to really, really be conscious of how your family moves about. And they go to school, and, you know, I know my daughter-in-law say they're going to hit the showers the moment they get back from school. that will help, you know, just help. It's just one more measure to do. And they can't change what maybe virus was inhaled during the day if they didn't have their mask on or whatever. But, you know, just continue to be good stewards of your family and do what you can. And know that we're available to, Katie and I are available, and our staff, if you have questions. But, you know, just make good choices.
Yeah, the words that kept coming up as you were speaking today was like, is balance and adjustment. You know, that it's, there's not a perfect anything. We have to balance things in life, and then we have to adjust to the current realities that are in front of us, and it will change throughout the year. Is that a fair kind of couple word summary of for you?
I believe it does. Okay. I have hope that it will change, and hopefully, you know, in within the next months or a year or so. But, and when we look at other countries, and, you know, my husband's from Italy, we look at how bad it was in Italy, and they were under stay home orders for longer than us. And their virus spread is very controlled now. Their death rate has really gone down. They did things right. Okay. It was hard. Mm-hmm. It was very, very hard. But great. I think that we can do it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And I just wanted to answer some of the frequently asked questions that the staff and I get just in regards to positive cases and contacts. Okay. Very briefly. So one of the questions that I often get is, if someone tests positive, how long do they have to stay in what we call isolation? So isolation is a little bit further than what we call quarantine. It means that if at all possible, the person needs to separate from other family members in the home, use a separate bathroom, use a separate bedroom if at all possible. And we know that might be difficult with young children. But once they've become isolated, if they're an asymptomatic case, then they are in isolation from 10 days from their test date. Mm-hmm. If they are symptomatic, then it goes to when their symptoms started. It has to be at least 10 days from symptom onset. They have to be 24 hours fever-free without the use of Tylenol, ibuprofen, fever-reducing medications, and we have to see symptom improvement. Now, we know with some of the symptoms of COVID, such as the loss of taste and smell that lingers for a while, we've also heard the cough sticks around. Do they have to be completely improved? No. It's not like you're going to feel like probably running a marathon when you get done having this virus, but you know, they have to feel better. The cough has to be less, you know, no fever. So that's for a positive individual. Now let's talk about quarantine. Quarantine is close contact. So anyone that was in that 6 feet distance for 15 or more minutes. And how quickly do we notify people of this? We do immediate notification. Now, the one thing I will say is that we have stopped calling individuals after about 9:15 p.m. Reason being is we got a lot of people that said, how do I know this isn't a hoax? But we start 7 days a week at 8 a.m. and we will work up until 9 p.m. to make contact notification, including on the weekends. So we will let you know in a very timely manner if you were named as a close contact. And then it's 14 days from last date of contact with the individual. So one of the things that we get a lot of confusion on is, okay, well, what if I get a test midway through my quarantine period and it's negative? I can go back to school, right? And the answer is no. Okay. We do know that we catch 99% of the cases within a two-week period, that two-week quarantine period. But it does take some people more or less time to develop that virus if they were in contact with someone. So even if you test negative for the virus on day two or three of your quarantine, you must finish your quarantine period all the way through day 14, because we don't know that on day 10 or 11, that virus may not become contagious for you. So if people do want to get tested, one of my recommendations is always to wait towards the end of your quarantine period, unless you would develop symptoms mm-hmm. sooner. And then, you know, the other thing that people often ask about as well is antibody test. So should I get an antibody test? What does it mean if I have a positive right. mm-hmm. antibody test? And certainly that's becoming more widely available at this time. And the most recent information that we've gotten from the Centers for Disease Control is that antibodies last for about 3 months. So once someone has tested positive for COVID, they have a built-up immunity for an estimation of about 3 months. So within that three-month period, if they are a close contact of someone, they do not need to re-quarantine. But if they test positive in January, and then in May, they're named as a close contact, we believe their antibodies have dropped off enough that can allow for reinfection. Okay. So they would have to take the same precautions as anyone else who was a close contact. And this is all very complicated. We don't expect people to remember it. But that's why, you know, what Vicky said is absolutely true. You know, if you have hypotheticals you want to run by us, if find yourself in a situation, certainly call us and we'll walk through and talk through as long as it takes for you to feel comfortable about the situation. The last thing that I did want to mention that a lot of people don't know is what happens when someone in the family that live in the home gets sick. And this is where it gets a little bit difficult because the quarantine period's so long for people in the household.
Right.
So we said 14 days from last date of contact. Well, the problem is, more than likely, you're unable to completely isolate from a child who's sick or from the rest of the family. So that individual is in for at least 10 days from symptom onset, okay? And we know that maybe day 8 or 9, they may still be passing the virus on to you. So once they come out of isolation after 10 days, that really starts your 2-week quarantine period. So people who live in the home are actually quarantined for almost 4 weeks by the time it's all said and done. And that's difficult to grasp. And so, you know, just letting people know that the contacts within the home are the most vulnerable contacts because they have that constant, repetitive, long amounts of exposure to that infected individual. But, you know, like I said, we're here to answer questions. It's confusing. It changes, yeah. Which makes it worse.
And the only thing I'll add to what you just said, Katie, is that we have some people that aren't better by 10 days. We have had people hospitalized for several days, multiple times, and were not able to return to their job like 6 weeks. So
it's not a perfect formula,
but it's the best we have.
Yep.
You know, it's the best we have. So it's just the rule of thumb, but then we'll still be assessing how the person is feeling toward the end of their isolation or quarantine period and before we decide that we can release them from quarantine or isolation. And then one thing I want people to know is only the health departments can put you in isolation and quarantine, and only the health departments can let you out.
Thank you.
We have that authority through the Ohio Revised Code to
But not the schools.
Yes. I'm afraid not, David.
I'm very glad it's you. Yeah. I'm a math teacher. You guys are the health professionals, and I think that's where it should be. Sure. But I do think it's confusing for a lot of folks. They do believe that we would be making those phone calls and stuff because of locations and other
and wondering
things.
Why you let someone come back to school, or, you know, why is this person back in school? Are they allowed to be, you know, and
correct.
Just recognize that, you know, we follow people through their isolation and their quarantine periods very closely and will only release them to come back when it is safe for everyone.
Yeah. And if they need a letter from us, we offer them a letter saying that, okay, they're finished with their quarantine or isolation period and they can return safely to their job or school if that's what they want from us. Not everybody who needs one or wants one, but if they do or their job requires it, we can give them that letter.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much. Vicky, taking time out of your day. I know how busy you guys are. And beyond just this here, with all of us, the schools, all of us in T County and all the schools here in Philly, how much you guys have helped us develop a plan, go through all scenarios, train our nurses, train staff to make sure that we are setting the children and our staff up to have a safe school year, and just the resources that you guys have been and that you'll continue to be. So appreciate what you're doing for our communities, and thank you for your time. And thank you guys for listening and tuning in today.
All right. I thought that was an amazing take from both of our health commissioners, and just hearing from someone with that background in public health is really important to us. They brought us some great points about it's safe to come back to school, but also we know that it's an individual decision. And here at New Philadelphia, we are here to support you no matter what your decision is. And honestly, you don't have a wrong decision. It is purely a personal and family decision. We're here to support you whichever way you go. So our virtual academy is here for you if that's the route you want to go. But do know that we have worked very hard to put all the precautions we possibly can have in place, all the safety measures to make sure that in-person education is as safe as possible for your children, for our staff, and for our community. We look forward to serving you this school year. If you have any questions, always reach out to us. Thank you for all that you do.